this week in Iowa. What's the solve to the teacher shortage? From easing up licensing requirements to more school aid, we explore the different proposals. Then we're talking first in the nation status. It was a caucus conundrum in 2020. What does that mean for the future of Iowa politics? Good morning, everyone, and thanks for being with us for this week in Iowa. I'm Sabrina Ahmed. It was a problem before the pandemic, but in the last 2 years, we have really highlighted the teacher shortage. Iowa lawmakers are working on a series of bills aimed at improving the state's teacher workforce. The pieces of legislation now making their way through the House Education Committee are aimed at boosting the number of available teachers. Like one piece of legislation, for example, would allow student teachers the ability to serve as a substitute teacher. Another piece of legislation changes thresholds for who can receive state education scholarships. Right now, it's for those in the top 25% of the program. This new proposal would change that to the top 50% of the program, so just widening the pool. The Republican who is spearheading that conversation is Representative Dustin Height. We spoke about his proposals and why he thinks these are the solutions.
Sure. So probably one of the most important that I think that we're working on has to deal with alternative licensure paths. So we're looking at people that are maybe looking for a second career that have been involved in a job, whether it's as a chemist or a police officer or you name it, who want to become a teacher. And so we're trying to make it quicker, which means cheaper for them to become a teacher while still maintaining those high quality standards. So that's one thing. We're looking at other ways to maybe increase substitutes. We're looking at allowing student teachers to get their substitute license. We're also looking at some of those require continuing education things that we require of teachers and whether or not those are necessary and are there ways that we can lessen those burdens on current teachers to keep them in the job. So those are just a few things that we're looking at in the Iowa House.
So we're hearing from the Democrats that the answer to all of this, maybe it's a hybrid of some of those things, but at the end of the day, schools need more funding. They're proposing a $300 million increase in that state supplemental aid. What are House Republicans' thoughts on increasing SSA to help these schools figure out where the funds are needed and address the teacher shortage internally?
Sure. So, I think we always are supportive of our schools. We've increased school funding almost $1 billion over the last 10 years. So, we view education as very important, but it all has to fit within the entire state budget. We spend about 57% of the entire state budget on education. When I've been out talking to different groups, I went to the University of Iowa and met with their College of Education this fall. And they said that actually teacher pay was not the most important thing that made people leave the career. It was student behavior and lack of support from administration. So when we actually talk to the people involved, everybody likes more money. There's no doubt about that, but that's not why we're hearing that people are leaving the career.
So how do you address those issues? How do you increase retention?
So, some of those things we can do a little bit, like student behavior, but some of that is just out of the state's control. But other things, like I said, we're working on the continuing education that they have. Last year we passed a bill that required schools to pay out that teacher salary supplement money. So we increased, give a kind of a one-time COVID bonus to teachers. We're looking at that. We're looking at some of the requirements that we're putting on. Are they truly necessary? So the governor is proposing to eliminate the master's degree for school librarians, which hasn't been in place all that long. So we're just looking at some of those things that, it's just one of those added burdens that a teacher has to deal with that just may be that thing that the straw that breaks the camel's back when they say we're done.
What do you believe Iowa House Republicans will propose as far as that SSA increase this year?
So we're still in that conversation. The governor came in at 2.5%. We hope to have that bill dropped here pretty soon. But I assume that we're going to be somewhere around the governor's number. But we want to make sure that we, adequately fund our school. We want to continue to work on the transportation inequity that we have been for the past several years, as well as the per pupil inequity. So I think you'll see some of that come from Iowa House Republicans.
Another issue I've heard from the Democrats in the Iowa House that they have with legislation is there was a recent bill proposed or introduced in the Iowa House that would perhaps send librarians to prison for 2 years if they make available or mandate books that someone considers obscene. I mean, that's jail time for a librarian?
So that bill hasn't been at least assigned to my education committee. I don't really see that having much legs. I think the majority leader in the Iowa Senate this past weekend said that's nowhere in the Senate. So, you know, I think that that is a pretty clear indication of that particular bill in the Iowa legislature this year.
Representative Height, what is your message to teachers? They're tired.
They are. And so, you know, I would tell teachers, look, you know, we're here to help you. We're here to do what we can to make your lives easier. Being a teacher is one of the most important things that you can be. They shape Iowa's future, and that is not lost on us. Many of us, myself included, we come from families of teachers. Many of us here even, in the Iowa House Republicans are teachers, have been teachers in the past. I'm not one of those. But, you know, we understand the important work they do. And so we want to be here to help them in ways that we can. And that's what we're trying to work on.
Democrats have their own ideas on how to fix the teacher shortage, and it's about funding their proposal for state supplemental aid. Democrats want to see a $300 million increase in state supplemental aid. That's that part of the state funding for public education. That's a 5% increase, as I mentioned just a few moments ago. I spoke to Democratic leaders about how they'll accomplish this and what they think that money can go toward.
And we came to the number of $300 million because after talking with education leaders, after talking with, you know, classroom parents and students across the state, we learned that there is a desperate need for increased funding in our schools. So when we were looking at the numbers, we decided we want to make sure this is fiscally responsible and that there's room in the budget for it. So we noticed that the governor had proposed a $300 million corporate tax cut as part of her budget. And we thought, well, perfect. Let's take that money and put it toward schools instead. Then we know that the money is in the budget because it's already been accounted for. And we can make sure that that money goes to kids, not corporations.
So your proposal is to not cut to corporate tax rates at all, and instead to give that money to state school, to education, public K through 12 schools.
Yep. We think that, you know, we know that corporations have received a lot of giveaways over the past several years. And so we think it's time that we put our focus on funding kids in schools instead of corporations. And so we think that this is a great way for K-12 schools across the state to do the important work they need to do and take this money and do what they need in their own districts. This isn't a one size fits all allocation. It's giving it to districts. Some might need help with subs or paraprofessionals. Some might need help with increasing the number of teachers in the building so they can have smaller class sizes. Some might need new books in the library, right? So we're just here to make sure that schools have what they need. They've been underfunded for more than a decade. It's time that schools got what they need because that's what kids deserve.
There have been a number of proposals. You mentioned hiring more subs or hiring more teachers, a number of proposals from the Republicans to try to fix the teacher shortage issue that our state is seeing, including allowing student teachers to become substitutes. How do you feel about that proposal?
Yeah, we're still talking with people who know how these things work about exactly what the impact of that would be. Certainly, we see there's a very sharp teacher shortage, and we want to make sure that we have qualified people in the classroom teaching kids. It may be that that's a solution that works. We're just still looking into that one. But I will tell you that one of the things that isn't helping teachers stay in the classroom is when other in legislation gets introduced that villainizes teachers. Just yesterday in the Iowa House, there was a bill introduced that would charge librarians, teacher librarians. Does everybody remember their librarian from school? Teacher librarians would charge them with a Class D felony if they assigned a book that someone defined as obscene. That is not the way to keep people in the classroom. That is not how to do this. I know right now of a teacher librarian who texted me and said, I'm done. I'm getting out of this. If I have to worry about these things, I can't do my work. And that's contributing to the teacher shortage as much as anything else.
There's another proposal from Republicans to make it easier to get the licensing to become a teacher. Have you explored that proposal as well?
Again, you know, we're looking at these. We want to. We do believe that there needs to be a holistic approach to addressing the teacher shortage. And so, you know, if there's a way to adapt licenses while still keeping that quality. that we deserve and expect, we're willing to look into that. But most importantly is that we value the teachers we already have there. We do what we can to keep them there. And we make sure that new teachers coming into the system are treated with the kind of respect they deserve so that they can do their jobs, which is why they got into this field in the first place. They love kids. They want to teach. Let's let them do that instead of using them as political pawns.
Okay, very quickly, talk to me about how you get this over the line. How do you work with Republicans who are in control to get this 5% SSA increase?
I mean, it's going to be tough. I'm not going to tease you. You know, this is a really tough slog, but we think it's important that people know what House Democrats and Senate Democrats believe is the right thing to do for public schools. We know right now that Iowa ranks 39th out of 50 in public school funding per student. That's not the way it always was. So maybe we'll remind our friends across the aisle that Iowa could be a leader again in public education if we would just invest. We also know that state funding per pupil is $1,200 less than the national average. We can do better. Iowa's an education state.
Taxes impact every single Iowan, how the different proposals are being considered. Tax cuts for all Iowans. That's the goal from the governor, the House, and the Senate. But how do we get there? The different bodies do not agree. This morning, we talked to the Speaker of the House, Pat Grassley, on how he works with the Senate and the governor to find some common ground.
We talked so much about taxes last week. We really broke down the House proposal, the Senate proposal, and the governor's proposals. Talk to me about, now you've had a little bit of time to digest them, where are Republicans in general? How are the House and the Senate going to find some common ground and be able to get it signed by the governor?
Well, I think nice talking to you again, Sabrina. And I think that the good news is there seems to be consensus around moving towards a flat tax. The Senate proposed a little bit lower number. Obviously, the House's proposal is in line with the governor's. So we've basically have taken all the parts from the governor's bill. We left corporate out of this current conversation because we've been saying that we want to have a simple to understand and focus on individual income tax. So that bill achieves that. And it's a bill we have a lot of support within the caucus for. And so as it moves forward, I think, you know, the fact that we're all starting towards the same premise, there may be some differences, especially on the individual income tax in the number. I think we're in a good position because everyone's using a similar formula, which is going to a flat tax, knowing we have the amount of revenue coming into the state and sitting around the state's coffers. And then from the standpoint of some of the other conversations that are going on in a much broader bill that the Senate has proposed, there's other pieces in there that, you know, we'll obviously, if the Senate decides to move on those and send them over, we'll want to engage in those conversations. But I think right now, our focus continues to be on making sure that individual income tax piece that we've been talking about for months now gets through as quickly as possible. You know, we'd love to get that locked in and sent to the governor.
Do you think then that there could potentially be another piece of legislation coming out of the Iowa House that would address the corporate tax rate, although that isn't in your original tax proposal here?
Well, I think it'll a lot of that will be how the conversation goes within the legislature. I would never say never, but right now the focus is going to be on the individual income tax piece because we know that fits within the budget. If there has to be a further conversation around other pieces, you know, we think that's more of a global conversation when it comes to the entire tax structure itself, when it comes to corporate taxes. So I think that would be what the conversation looked like. But again, we'll see how session progresses, whether or not that really is how it ends up playing out.
I'd like to just talk for a second about, you know, how things are going between Republicans in the House, the Senate, and the governor's office. It's my understanding you didn't get a full list of all the governor's proposals before she announced her plan and the condition of the state. I know that we're seeing, obviously, the House and the Senate are never exactly on the same page, but do you feel like communication lines are good? Are they open? Do you feel like you're even close to hitting a wall?
No, I think we're actually in a good position because a lot of the same issues that the governor has, that she touched on in her condition of the state, as well as are part of her package that she is delivering to the legislature when it comes to those issues, are the same issues that we've been talking about leading up to session, you know, workforce, obviously parental involvement in their children's education, whether it's through transparency, whether it's through more choice in education, the tax policy. So I think we're actually in a really good position. You know, I was aware of a lot of what the governor was going to be touching on. Obviously,
whether it's the House, the Senate, the governor, we always want to try to release bills when they're ready. You try to perfect them as much as possible. And so I don't have any concerns about that. As long as we're all working towards the same goal, it'll be a lot like other sessions where we just, you know, you find your differences. And at the end of the day, to do the work for Iowans, we'll find those similarities and move the bills forward.
The Senate proposal does have an increase in sales tax. Do you see that being something that the House is willing to move on?
Yeah, I've been pretty clear that I don't want to see us to have, I really am not in the mood to be raising making significant increases in tax policy while we have all these dollars sitting around the state. You know, looking at some offsets and other things like some of the corporate conversations, that's a little bit different in my mind than just going out and raising a tax. So I've been a little resistant to do that at this point because the state is sitting in such a strong financial position.
Well, we'll continue to check in with you, Speaker Grassley, as we, of course, move through the session. I really appreciate your time, as always.
Good talking to you again. Thank you.
The goal is to finalize the tax proposals within the next few weeks because these have to be finalized before budgets can be finalized. Democrats have also released their own tax plan, and those are all detailed at weareiowa.com. Iowa's first in the nation status isn't guaranteed, especially after the caucus conundrum of 2020. We check in with the Iowan who has a seat at the table in the national discussion. The Democratic caucuses in 2020 were a mess. It took days before results were reported because of problems with the reporting app. Then there was that controversy over errors and inconsistencies for several caucus locations. Now the focus turns to 2024, the presidential nominating process, and whether Iowa will remain first in the nation. The DNC Rules and Bylaws Committee, who sets the rules and the calendar, had their first of many meetings, and one Iowan is there for the discussions.
Well, certainly, obviously, you know, we're beginning to start talk about the 2024 presidential nominating process. And the committee that I serve on, the Rules and Bylaws Committee, is the committee that sets forth the rules for that process, and then they're either adopted or rejected by the entire DNC. So going into Saturday, there are 31 members of the committee and there are 13 new members. And so, you know, there's an educational piece that we have to do because there are very few caucuses left. And the caucuses have been heavily disfavored by the Democratic National Committee for the last couple of cycles. And so we just have some education to do.
Okay, now we're post that meeting. What is the feel? How do you feel walking out of that meeting now that you've had the opportunity to kind of get a sense of what these 13 new members feel about maybe Iowa's caucuses at all, and also Iowa going first?
Clearly, the 13 new members didn't say anything. I didn't say anything either. You know, at this point, you know, it's still sort of an educational piece, but it's clear from some of the holdover members that, you know, I'm disappointed, but they clearly are, some folks are going to come after Iowa. They're not, they don't like caucuses, and they don't like Iowa's place in the process. And so, you know, we've got work to do. I've been working with Democratic Chair Ross Wilburn on sort of a strategy to educate folks, and we've got work to do.
Okay, I mean, that sounds kind of scary. It's not just politics. There's so much that rides on Iowa's first in the nation status. There's concern that if we are no longer first in the nation, we become a flyover state in terms of national politics. Do you agree with that if we no longer have our first in the nation status?
I think that candidates will not come to Iowa if we're not first. You know, they're bigger markets. You know, if I'm a candidate with piles and piles of money, I'm going to go to the coasts where, you know, TV is expensive, but I can drown out anyone else's voice because I have the most money. I mean, that's the beauty of Iowa, a place, you know, where, you know, Barack Obama was able to come to Iowa, you know, little known senator from Illinois and ultimately become the nominee. Pete Buttigieg, you know, did very well in Iowa in 2020. You know, and he was a little known mayor of South Bend, Indiana. So folks like that, you know, have chances to really shine. And, you know, if I was not first in the process, I think that goes away.
That could have a huge implication on the kind of candidates that we see move forward.
You're exactly right. I think it, you know, it will enhance front runners because they are going to start with the most money and the most name identification. And as I think, as a candidate without either of those things, I don't know how you break through. So it does change the process significantly. You know, who knows what the process is going to look like going forward? It's clear there are multiple members of the committee that also don't like New Hampshire's role in the process. But you know, New Hampshire fights tooth and nail to guard that, and they're a primary, and that's a, you know, at least from what I've been hearing from the DNC, the fact that, you know, that they're a primary gives them an advantage over us because we're still a caucus.
So do you think this could change the process in Iowa? Do you think we could move away from caucuses, or is it solely up for debate when on the calendar we fall?
All things are on the table.
Okay.
And that's what they've said, is that they're going into this process with no preconceived notions. You know, could it be that, you know, South Carolina, which was, I mean, that's the reason Joe Biden is president today, is that, you know, he won South Carolina and, you know, got into front runner status. You know, was South Carolina go first? You know, that they could be rewarded for, you know, the fact that he was there, they were his firewall. And so I think, you know, everything's on the table. You know, we love our caucuses, you know, and we refine them every cycle. But at this point, you know, we don't know.
We don't know. This was just the initial meeting. It was virtual. They'll meet every month now through summer. Everything is on the table, as we just heard, from the actual caucus to when it happens. We'll be right back. Thank you so much for joining us here for This Week in Iowa. Next week, we'll plan to break down the Democratic tax plan that they've proposed this week as well. And of course, don't forget, you can always find us on Spotify or anywhere you get your podcasts. Have a great rest of your Sunday, everyone.